Still part of it, still part of it. About some tech, still part of it, still part of it.
Jay-Z White in the catalog.
Still part of them, still part of them.
The kids are legends, the gods.
Still part of them, still part of them. Still part of them, still part of them. The boss of death is still part of them.
Welcome to Still Potable, the best Celtics podcast on Al Gore's internet. He is Brian B. Rob from MassLive.com. I am Sam Jam Packard from Still Potable. We are a Monday through Friday Celtics podcast, and you can find every single one of our podcasts on Patreon.com/Still Potable. This is the weekly free episode of Still Potable. Still Potable is on CLNS, is powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network. We are joined, Brian. Wow, fumbling it right here. I'm flustered. I asked B-Rob before if the altitude was getting to him because he is in Denver. The altitude is getting to me because B-Rob is here. He was at the game last night against the Cleveland Cavaliers in the building to watch the Celtics absolutely collapse, give up a 22-point lead in the fourth quarter. Jay and I kind of talked about our views from a distance about that collapse last night on Still Potable. But B-Rob, I want to get your perspective. What was it like in the building to see just, I would say, the Celtics' mediocre performance for that entire game and then really bad performance, especially down the stretch?
Yeah, it was it was a lot of hoopla. You guys talked about last night. We had the Joey Chestnut appearance. The Kelly Brothers had a 3-minute long tribute video during a timeout, which is absolutely wild.
But I guess connect them with Cleveland. I didn't know.
I had no idea. I mean, he went to high school there. Who knew? But they treated him. I'm surprised they didn't retire his jersey too during the night. But yeah, it was a pretty tame crowd. And then all of a sudden, just Dean Wade happened.
Dean Wade
and the Celtics, by the other token, I think, it wasn't their best game, as you pointed out, regardless, but they still, just like the Cavs, just couldn't score. They couldn't figure it out. And then they finally started hitting threes and the Celtics couldn't attack them the other side of the court. And then we saw the same old song and dance from Jason Tatum in these tight and late situations within when they're trailing there. But yeah, I think, I don't know if you want to call it a wake-up call, but it was certainly a situation where you look at just their issues over the last couple of years in these key spots against another, a top-tier opponent that they may or may not see in a couple months. And you just wonder again, like, okay, they've progressed in so many areas. Why have they not progressed in this late-game management type stuff?
You're normally a pro timeout guy, right? What did you think about the lack of timeout? Well, we just have to accept that this is what Joe Mazzulla is going to do, especially in a regular season game.
Yeah, I think I beat that drum a lot last year. And at this point, it's like, it's his philosophy and that's fine. And it's like, and I have no problem with that philosophy as long as it shows like the process works. And the problem that I have now is like the process is not working. Like they've given it the learning period last year, the learning period this year. You say, oh yeah, yep. Do you say the same song and dance every single time after the fact when you don't get the shot off in time or you get a poor shot selection, whatever you want to call it. But now it's like, I'm at a point where you'd want to see, given the stakes that we're seeing now, Packard, as we go into April and May, like we need some better process. Like who cares if you make a miss shot is going to happen. What's going to happen is going to happen. But getting there and how you get there needs to get better right now. And I wonder, I mean, when you look at it from your vantage point, like, how do you go about that? Is it a situation where Joe has to be, if he's not going to call a timeout, okay, this is not going the way I want to, like, have a quicker trigger to be like, all right, we actually do need a timeout here. Or is it just purely on Tatum to be like, listen, you need better awareness here, man. You're not your high IQ player who just isn't handling these spots well.
Yeah, I think that's where it came down, is that it, like, it's strictly that last possession falls on Tatum. Because I actually thought they had, like, some decent execution down the stretch. If we're just, like, talking about clutch time, like, they had the nice play where Kristaps found Drew running for the backdoor cut. Like, I think it's not – I think it sometimes gets characterized as, like, all of their clutch offense. It really feels like it's a last-second, last-shot issue with Jason Tatum, where the hater in me wants to be like he's too Kobe-esque in those moments and, like, wants to have the final hero shot. But I ultimately do think it, like, falls on Jason Tatum, and the responsibility is his to figure that out and not either to go earlier or just to get into something that's just not an isolation. And the thing that I think is difficult is Joe Mazzulla talks about, like, reacting to different situations and being prepared for everything. It's really hard to manufacture late game scenarios where it comes down to the last possession. The Celtics have been very good about avoiding those. They've been beating teams by 20 or 30. And so I think it's just human nature, I think, for them to kind of, like, in the last second, just everyone turn to Jason Tatum and have him figure it out. Like, I think they did what they needed to do to get Tatum onto Garland. Like, that's clearly the matchup they were looking for. And that's the read and react I think Joe was looking for. But I would like to see something more than just, I guess, an isolation one-on-one play. I mentioned this last night in talking to Jay, but when the Cavs cut it to four, the Celtics had a really good play where they got it to Kristaps. They had Tatum set a screen for Derek White. Derek White catches the ball and, like, creates this kind of mismatch, and he finds Jaylen Brown in the corner. I don't feel like I've seen the Celtics run a play in a final seconds of the game that involves more than one player in a while. Like, Jason Tatum hit that game winner against the 76ers last year, and that was the kind of that full court play where he starts in the backcourt and gets a pitch. And, like, I like the movement there. I just want something else where you can get more players involved, because it feels like with the isolation, yes, you get that matchup on Garland, but you also have Jared Allen just kind of shading everything in that situation. And it forces Jason Tatum, he got kind of beat up that entire game. The Cavs were being very, very physical against him. But I didn't think he was necessarily going to get to the rim in that. And so it creates this mid-range floater, which, yes, he's more than capable of making. But, I don't know, getting some more guys involved in the action, maybe just getting a pass, it's like swinging the ball, doing something other than dribbling for the first 10 seconds of that possession. Even if it's just passing the ball around to get the defense moving to then start on the Jason Tatum isolation, I think it just needs to be something so not the entire defense is, like, just loaded up to him. But I don't know how you necessarily practice for that other than Joe Mazzulla showing Jason Tatum, like, this is what we do not want you to do, and so hopefully do something different next time. I'm curious, you were there.
Just take the ball out of his hands, like, to start to, like, not on the possession, but to start the play. Be like, Derek White's initiating.
A different play.
Drew Holiday, exactly. It's like, and you don't want to, I mean, again, this is, like, politics-wise with the players, you don't want to, like, this is Jason Tatum. This is a top five, top 10 NBA talent. Like, obviously, he wants the ball. He wants to be a decision maker, whether it's him taking the shot or not in those sequences. But to your point, like, you have all these weapons this year. You have this five guys you would feel good about taking a shot, which hasn't been the case for the last couple of years. So that's where you, like, excuse some of the way where you want to, like, growing pains through these processes. But now we have the pattern of whether it's game four against the Sixers. There was a regular season game against the Knicks last year, too. It was the same situation. They were down by one, like 20 seconds left. Didn't even get going into any kind of action until, like, there was 5 seconds left in the game, and then they lose. So it's like, in those particular sequences, it's a whole different ball game from a tie game holding for one. Like, you just, this is a very smart, analytically driven team. The math says it's better to have more than one chance to tie the game or go ahead. And if Tatum can't figure that out, or, like, is taking too long to read things, you have appealing alternatives, or you just call a timeout and say, okay, this is how we're getting the action. This is how we're getting you the ball, Jason. Like, we're not going to put it just on you.
Yeah, I'm curious, because you were there in Cleveland, about what the team's reaction was after the game. But before we get to that, we're going to hear a short break from our friends, our sponsors.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's a tournament season or the fight for a playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play, and I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Use the code CLNS for the first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Welcome back to Still Potable here on CLNS. If you want more Still Potable, we are here for you every day, Monday through Friday. Go to patreon.com/stillpotable. We'll have recaps of every single Celtics game for the rest of the year, every single playoff game. So again, if you want that access, you want those podcasts, go to patreon.com/stillpotable.
7-day free trial too, if you want to try it out. It's a great time to get aboard.
Great time to get aboard. Maybe you check us out after tomorrow night's game, the biggest game of the year. We'll definitely be talking about that later in this episode. But B-Rob, you were there in Cleveland. You got a chance to, you know, be in the room, press conference room with Joe Mazzulla and the players after the game. I'm just kind of curious what their approach was, what they were saying, and how much did Joe Mazzulla talk about loving being in that situation, because it was a challenge and something new for his team.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's all aboard about, you know, turning those the positive out of any experience. I think there is a little less of that. It's tough when you take even a last minute aside, when you blow a 22-point lead against the team without three starters in the last 9 minutes of a game, like that's just bad. And there was, you know, well, the focus is on Tatum there in the last minute, but there's a lot of things defensively it didn't go right. Drew Holiday missed a key block out on the go-ahead dunk by Wade. Like, there's a long list of things, but it's just a sign that we saw, like, a lot of those kind of games last year, Packard, and it was just so weird to see that again, I think, with this team, with this group, to just kind of not totally turtle, but you know, Wade got hot, the Cavs got hot, but they also just made a lot of mistakes, and it kind of, like, you know, had a domino effect on the team. And so given where they are in the standings, there wasn't too much, like, Joe wasn't too beat up about it, I don't think. And same with Porzingis. I think he made the point that it was, hey, this might be a good thing for us, kind of a little bit of a wake up call, a little bit of a humbling experience here to, like, lose a game like that. But Jaylen Brown, to his credit, like, he seemed like flat out, like, pissed, like, this, even though this is big picture, an inconsequential game. Like every other game here in the next 6 weeks, for the most part, he was like, no, this is unacceptable. We can't lose a game like this.
Did Tatum speak after the game? I think, yes. I saw maybe one quote, but I think one thing that is very much a strong suit of his, as much as, like, Brad Stevens and Joe Mazzulla are these kind of Kaizen growth mindset people, can't get high, can't get too low. Jason Tatum is one of the people who subscribes to that as much as the next person. And so I did not see what he said, but I wouldn't be shocked if he was just like, yeah, I probably held it too long, but, like, got to go get the next one. And it's just like, it's very cool and calm and collected. And I don't think he's going to, at least not publicly, be the type of person who's going to really dwell on, I guess, the possible mistake he made down the stretch. Am I right? Did I correctly analyze Jason Tatum post game?
You almost had word for word, Packard, in terms of being like, yeah, no, sometimes, you know, I probably should have gone sooner, because in case shit like that happens, I, like, a foul overturn and not even leaving enough time for potential putback. Yeah, so again, I don't know whether he's not the type of guy who will, like, you know, go at length to be like, yeah, I really, that is totally on me. It was more again just like, yeah, probably should have done something better there, but on to Denver. And again, yeah, that mindset has worked well for this team all year. They've, to their credit, have bounced back. They don't have more than one or two game losing streaks all year long. So it's not like this is, you can think like, oh, is this going to be the start of a little, you know, major bump in the road for this team? The answer is probably no, but it's more of a, when you're trying to peak and you're trying to clean up areas of weaknesses all year long, it was something that you didn't expect to kind of bubble back to the surface given how the first three quarters went of that game.
Yeah. I mean, the focus is obviously going to be on the end because they came up short, but we brought it up that I just don't think they played great basketball. For the first three quarters of that game, they especially played pretty terrible basketball in the fourth quarter. I was shocked to see that they were up by 20, but like, Derek White only scored 3 points in that game, and Derek White only had 5 shots. And so they also had 13 turnovers, which led to 17 points. And after, I think, the first half where they shot the three pretty well, they only made, I think, 5 threes in the entire second half. And so I think it's easy to kind of scrutinize the final possession because that's the thing that you kind of, as a Celtics fan, you're most nervous about. It's like brings you back to all of those kind of playoff series in the past. But this was a clearly, compared to the 11-game winning streak, a game in which they did not have their best, I would say, for the first three quarters. And then it kind of, they tempted the basketball gods, and the basketball gods clearly punished them by delivering Dean Wade, the second comeback.
Yeah, they didn't make a shot outside the paint in the whole fourth quarter. Like, forget threes, just not outside the period, which is absolutely wild. And I think Jaylen Brown.
The Cavs made 10 shots, like field goals in a row. And so
Right. It's
going to be hard. Like, obviously, a 22-point lead is not a great thing, but it's like also, I think in the long run, it's the Celtics are coming off just in a crazy winning streak. And they, you know, first game on the road, they're probably feeling themselves a little bit. I think I want to be a positive spinster and say maybe this is a good thing to help them refocus before this game against the Denver Nuggets, which I think it's got to be the biggest game of the season right now. I think they're both prohibitive favorites to win their conference. They had a pretty great, like one of the better basketball games of this year that the Celtics played, a matchup in January. The Nuggets ended up winning that 102-100. I'm just looking back at the box score now, kind of a defensive slugfest. Like you expect both those teams to be high scoring and be much more scoring in like the 120s, but 102-103. The Celtics, I think, as good as Jokic was, obviously, you know, casual 34-12-9 from him, but Jamal Murray also had 35 points in that game. And I think one of the things that was startling from a Celtics fan's perspective is that the Celtics are supposed to have this amazing perimeter defense, the best defensive backcourt in the NBA. They have these long wings who can also switch out onto Murray and Tatum and Brown. But I didn't think they had an answer for Jamal Murray in that game. And if I remember correctly, he knocked down like a lot of long twos that were like just pretty talented because he's an extremely talented player. But they didn't really slow him down. And he was 15-21 in that game. And so I think Jokic is going to be Jokic. Like, I think he's probably going to get a 30-point triple-double again. That's just what Jokic does. But the key for me heading into this Thursday night matchup against the Nuggets is, like, what can you do to slow down Jamal Murray? Because if they do that, I think they have a pretty good shot of winning. But if they give up another 30 points to him, I think they're going to struggle.
Yeah, I feel like Murray just throughout his career has been an absolute killer against the Celtics, no matter who he's been going against, whether it's Smart or Wyatt and Drew Holiday in this game this season. He just has gotten clearly better and better over time, but it's a guard like that who has the speed and just the pull-up ability always seems to give this Celtics core issues. And we're going to see, like, defensive assignments for this game. Like, Jaylen Brown has been taking on a lot of those challenges early on just to, like, maybe give Drew Holiday a little bit more freedom in other parts of the defense or help. You'd think Derek White wouldn't make sense to start him for this game, but maybe Jalen, like after doing it with Steph Curry, is like, hey, this is maybe I can, you know, body him up more, a little more, like, you know, not beat him up, but essentially just make life harder for him. But certainly, him going up against Porzingis, like in like the drop and pick and roll, that's where I think the Celtics will have run into problems in the past and will continue to, because there are no good options there. Because if you switch that, then who's going on the Joker? And there's a thousand other ways that the Denver can slice and dice you in that spot, because those guys have just become so good at just running that offense together.
Yeah, and obviously stopping the Murray-Jokic pick and roll is the key. That's Denver's bread and butter, and that's what made them, you know, be so dangerous in the playoffs last year. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what the defensive matchups are in this game. You mentioned on Murray, but my recollection in that first quarter against the Nuggets game is they started Kristaps on Jokic, and it did not go well. Jokic just played through Kristaps' chest. And so I think we're going to see a lot of Al Horford. I think we could see a lot of maybe
this is Drew Holiday on him.
Maybe Drew Holiday, maybe Xavier Tillman. I like the next
Tillman now. This would be an interesting game for Tillman. If he's...
It could be Tillman because he is like a strong guy. I think we're going to see a lot of Al Horford in there. But where do they put Kristaps? Because it feels like Mazzulla kind of likes to put Kristaps on the kind of the worst shooter of the other team. And so that would probably be Aaron Gordon, who is just thriving in the dunker spot. Like he just lives in the dunker spot, and him and Jokic have this amazing connection where anytime Jokic gets doubled, there's Aaron Gordon for that kind of that dump off dunk. And so I'm just very curious to see how they approach the Nuggets on the defensive end, because I'm not just trying to think it out loud. Now I'm not really sure what the best kind of matchup is. It feels like, and that's kind of the brilliance of Jokic, because the Celtics don't really have that guy with like elite kind of size and brawn. Maybe they do now in Tillman to kind of slow down Jokic. And so it's going to be very curious to see how they kind of try to adjust to, one, trying to slow down Jokic, but then two, having the perimeter guys to slow down Murray at the same time.
Exactly. And the rest of the, I mean, the Nuggets are fully healthy now for this matchup. So you have Caldwell Pope, you have Porter Jr., like those guys, like Denver, they're kind of a lesser version of the Celtics this regular season. They're like ninth in offense, ninth in defense. They're like really good, but not great in either department. But they're also a team where it's like, you can just like, they're just pacing themselves. Like they know where they can get to, and they don't know like when they to hit those buttons, but the chemistry is clearly still there in those departments. And so it's finding the areas where the Celtics can, you know, where can you help? Do you say we just want to roll the dice with Aaron Gordon and giving him open shots and then pack the cane against Jokic and Murray? Or is that a situation where you are just leaving yourself wide open to be, you know, in trouble all night with rotations? Because once Gordon hits one or two of those, then you have to get back out to him, and that opens up a host of other problems within defense. So it'll be a night potentially for experimentation. And it'll be, again, a good challenge for, like, I think Joe Mazzulla and the coaching staff here to say, like, what do we want to tinker with here? What do we want to experiment with? And how much do we want to give a guy like Tillman just to see what he can do in a spot like that? Because that's obviously going to become a much bigger storyline if those two teams make it to June.
Yeah, and it's like, how much can you survive Tillman out there on the offensive end? Because one of the things about that game against the Nuggets is the Celtics didn't really shoot that well, 42% from the field. Just looking at the box score again, they felt like they got a lot of threes. I can't remember this, but like Derek White was 5 for 12 from three. So clearly the Nuggets were okay with him shooting. And so I think that the Celtics will continue to attack with that, but Tatum and Brown were a combined 1 of 17 from deep. And so
I forgot about how bad that was.
It's also the type of thing where it's like, if the Celtics shoot their normal shooting percentage from three, or even have a hot shooting game, you could also could see this kind of potential. Like, to the Celtics have the potential to blow any team out, really, if they get a hot shooting night from three. So I think it's going to be a great kind of battle, and especially coming off this loss, it's the major test everyone's kind of talking about these two teams in the finals. The East is entirely wrapped up. And so I'm very curious to see on the road against one of the better teams in the Western Conference, if there's any knocks against this Celtics team, it's their record against the tie in the top teams in the West. They already have losses against the Nuggets, the Clippers, the Timberwolves, the Thunder. And so if you're going to play the narrative game, if you're going to feel like the Celtics are listening to the noise, and like it's going to be fascinating to see just kind of the level of effort and how much they actually care about this game, which will probably be the closest environment to a playoff game they're going to get, I would assume, for the rest of the season. Maybe they'll get kind of more battles when they play Milwaukee again. But this is, I would say, the most important game for the rest of the season, just for a measuring stick, just for a, like, let's see how we are against the cream of the crop, the best in the NBA.
And the great part is everyone's like, Denver is fully healthy. Like, they don't have anyone on the injury report. Jaylen Brown is questionable with a knee situation. I think contusion, but I would fully expect him to play for a game like this. Like, if he needs rest, he'll get another game, you would suspect. But yeah, exactly. This is because, like, you're not going to face the Bucks are playing a lot better, but things could just be totally wrapped up by then in these. Like, at least right now, you can say we still have work to do. Denver clearly is very motivated right now in a battle for the one seed in the West. And so both teams are rested going into this game. And the Celtics clearly have probably not only a sour taste in their mouth from Tuesday night, but just how that they didn't score in the final 5 minutes of that game against the Nuggets back in Boston. And so it's kind of just to further magnify, okay, what can we do here against, and, you know, elite teams in crunch time situations where we haven't had a lot of those instances this year. Like, we may not, if we blow every team out, it might not even be an issue for most times in the playoffs, but that's going to be a lot harder to do than what we've been seeing in the regular season. And even just going back to last season, Packard, like, outside of like game six against like the Sixers, there really weren't many games, and Derek White, like, you know, hitting the game winner in game six against the Heat, like, there weren't spots where the Celtics really just executed in those spots against really good teams. And that's not a problem if you can win by 20, but it's pretty tough to count on yourself just to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think that's like the toughest part of playing championship basketball. Obviously, executing against the best teams in the most clutch moments sounds easier said than done. I just remembering back to that game, it was a kind of an ugly fourth quarter for both teams. Like, the Nuggets found a way to prevail, but I don't think a lot of either guy scored many baskets in the final 6 minutes. The Nuggets scored 21 points in that quarter, the Celtics 18. It was a kind of an ugly defensive basketball game, a defensive struggle. And that's kind of what playoff basketball turns into. Like, everything slows down, everything gets harder, everything gets uglier. And so maybe we should expect the same in this game. Maybe take some unders if you're on Prize Picks, who knows. One thing we should mention, the injury report came out today. Jaylen Brown is questionable with, I might need your help pronouncing this, a sacroiliac strain. What the heck is that?
I assume it's something with the knee, but I don't know.
I'm going to Google
a sacroiliac. Let's get a little Dr. Packard on the case there. I think it's
a joint that links the pelvis and the lower spine.
Ooh.
That's not what I was anticipating.
No, I would, yeah.
Yeah, right around the hip area. I don't remember Jaylen taking a fall in Cleveland, so I don't know when exactly that might have happened, but he is questionable on the injury report, so I'll be curious to see. I'm assuming he's going to play in this game. I'm assuming he'll play in Phoenix, probably sit out one of the back-to-backs, Portland or Utah, but yeah. Sacroiliitis. It seems like Jaylen has that affliction. I don't know. I'm as shocked as you guys.
Who do you like off the bench? The bench matchups in this between these two teams is fascinating to me now, especially after Denver, you know, lost some key guys. Now, like, this is a spot where the Celtics should have a real edge here against the Nuggets' youth and stuff like that. But choice wise, like who in not even this game, but like a real finals match, like who do you trust to play against this team? Like beyond Al Horford, obviously, like who, like is Hauser and Pritchard like reliable pieces for you? Do you think they can hang with some of the Nuggets starters when those in those mixed units there? Or if these two teams eventually play, is this a situation where we're just going to be seeing like 6.5 guys playing in a series, or like, you know, Al and maybe a first half stint for Pritchard and Hauser, and then that's it because the Nuggets are just so like big and well-rounded across the rest of the floor?
I have complete faith in like Sam Hauser at this point. He's just such a like dynamic threat from deep that I think you can bring him in for stints. And just like if you lose him in transition at some point, he's going to be open. He's going to knock down a three. I think he's solid enough on defense that like, I think you just, no matter what the game is, you're going to bring in Sam Hauser for a little bit. Peyton Pritchard's a different story because I feel like he's been more up and down. Obviously, he's cemented a role as that kind of backup ball handler. But I think he needs to be aggressive. And I kind of think that in order to beat the Nuggets, you got to outscore them. And so him being an offensive threat, whether it's being aggressive shooting from three or just aggressive getting to the paint, is going to be important. And so I feel like you kind of need those guys that you just need a kind of constant scoring barrage for all 48 minutes. And I feel like in order to sustain an effort like that, you need Pritchard and Hauser. Obviously Horford's going to be in there. I think the real question is, I don't know if this is a Luke Kornet game. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with Javier Tillman, because I do think they need some size to combat Jokic. But that's like, how much can you give up on the offensive end if you're just trying to outscore them? Like, I don't think there's any real way to kind of slow them down. And so you kind of need this all offense all the time. I like the more idea of this more five out, more like spread offense to kind of pull Jokic away from the basket, make him work more on defense. And so any guys who can provide spacing, that's Pritchard, that's Hauser, that's Horford, I think are going to play, whereas it's maybe less of a opportunity for the non-shooters like Kornet or Tillman.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like I think when they went cold in that last game in Boston against Nuggets, like they didn't involve Jokic enough in those actions at the end of the game. Like you have to, they're going to try to hide him on someone that they hope the Celtics won't like, well, just keep in a corner, whether that's even like Drew Holiday or like Jaylen Brown or whatever, like late in games. And the Celtics have to take advantage of that. They have to figure out, okay, where is he? Like, anticipate Denver will probably like try to pre-switch stuff, get like a little tricky with it. And the Celtics should have, you know, counters for that type of stuff, because that's the clear guy that, you know, he, when he tries on defense, he can be useful, but he's really not capable of like defending any of these guys all over the floor for the Celtics. And so that's a clear weakness right now for them, and for them to take advantage of. And as I'm looking at the Denver right now, Packard, like Porter Jr. is having a phenomenal year, shooting almost 40% from three, averaging 16 a game, 48% field. Like he's really coming to his prime now at 25. And again, that's another guy you go at defense, but like he can, to have that be your third option on your team right now, as he just is getting better and better now, makes like me feel better and better about like Denver being the team that actually is going to come out of the West. Cause it's like, I'm not sure how teams out there stop this in a 7-game series.
Yeah. They're rolling. The thing that like I think is a maybe an issue for them is just their bench. Like if you're looking, they most like Aaron Gordon played 42 minutes. They're all the rest of the players are in the upper 30s. I don't know how much belief I have in Reggie Jackson and Peyton Watson and Christian Braun. Like, Christian Braun barely played. It was basically they played a 7-man unit against the Celtics. And so I think really dominating the non-Jokic minutes is going to be important for the Celtics. Like they have to kind of take an advantage there, because I just don't know if the Nuggets have the same depth that they had when they had Bruce Brown, when they had Jeff Green. And maybe, you know, we'll see how the Celtics kind of attack their bench lineups. We've seen Mazzulla kind of play around with different kind of rotations. It's going to be when Jokic comes off the court, who does he put on the court to kind of have the most opportune lineups to kind of attack those bench lineups? it's going to be a fascinating matchup. I'm looking forward to Thursday night. You're going to be there in Denver. I hope you don't get affected by the high altitude, but Jay and I will be recording after the game. And so if you want to hear that live reaction, you can go to patreon.com/stillpotable. You should go to patreon.com/stillpotable if you want to, you know, get that 7-day free trial, sign up, maybe try it out a little bit before becoming a kid, a legend, or a god. If not, we'll catch you next time here on CLNS on the free episode. And so for Brian B. Rob of Mass Live, I am Sam Jam Packard. We really appreciate everyone tuning in on the YouTube, everyone listening on the free podcast feed. Highly encourage you to go subscribe at patreon.com/stillpotable. We appreciate CLNS and Prize Picks for showing us here on the free YouTube. And we'll be back tomorrow after the game, breaking down Nuggets Celtics.